to the Chronicle on Riot Radio. I'm your host, Morsal Azimian, and later I'll be joined by Mustafa Aziz with the weather. On today's show, find out if the days are getting colder or the years are getting warmer, or both. And we'll share a powerful poem by a young Black poet in Durham. Durham's Black History Month kicked off last Saturday with its 14th annual event. The audience saw a live and pre-recorded performances and guest appearances remotely. The event is usually held at J. Clark Richardson Collegiate in Ajax, but due to COVID, it has been moved online.
For this first venture into the digital platform, we actually just said, let's stick to what we know. In future years, we may venture into different areas, but we actually just kept it the same. So we've got performing acts, and all we're doing now is instead of bringing them to the stage for a text rehearsal, we're bringing them to their computer in Zoom for a tech rehearsal. And
the audience saw a live and pre-recorded performances and guest appearances remotely. Tala Lumbu, the leader of the Black Spoken Team, also creates poems and performs solos. Here is part of Lumbu's poem called Melanin.
Thank you for a well-rehearsed lie. You kept telling me that if I could only see who you truly were underneath the faulty headlines, then I would tighten my grip around you and love you more.
We'll have Lumbu reading her full poem later in the show. The lack of outdoor rinks has been an issue for Oshawa City Council since hometown hockey came in the city in 2015. But the COVID-19 pandemic has brought it back to the forefront. And it looks like an outdoor rink could come in time for the city's 100th anniversary 3 years from now. Councillor Rosemary McConkie says the outdoor rink will have to be refrigerated because of Oshawa's unpredictable winter weather. The pipes alone could cost about $1 million.
The way that we used to do it, especially when I was a kid, putting the boards up, flooding, just with a hose and off you go. It's good for 5 months, is no longer realistic.
But Carter reports to the Rotary Park downtown and the upcoming Ed Broadbent Waterfront Park is potential sites for the rink. Both the mayor and Councillor McConkie suggest citizens who support the project continue sending letters to the council. COVID-19 has stolen attention from many other issues facing around the world, including a big one, climate change. Andrew Clark has more on how Durham Region is battling one of the world's biggest challenges, even in the face of a pandemic.
It's been 1 year since Durham Region announced a climate emergency on January 29, 2020. However, with the COVID-19 pandemic, many plans have been put on hold. So how has the region done at meeting its first year targets?
Certainly we haven't been, sitting on our heels, so to speak, over 2020. It's been it was a busy year, and I think it set us up for what I hope is going to be a successful launch in 2021.
McVeigh says the region has started to put a number of plans in motion to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. These initiatives include installing 60 new electrical vehicle charging stations throughout the region and providing homeowners with the opportunity to install more efficient and renewable energy measures. McVeigh says those are the region's two priorities.
It's clear when we look at the region's greenhouse gas inventory that buildings and transportation make up 90% of our 80% of our total greenhouse gas emissions on an annual basis.
Some environmentalists say it's essential for communities to act on climate emergency declaration when it comes to future development.
How you're planning for your future city also is determining how well you're protecting your citizens against the impacts of climate change as they increase in severity. So you really need to be looking at both sides, mitigation, which is reducing your emissions in the future, but also adaptation to the changes that are coming.
As the region continues to grow, McVeigh says everybody needs to participate in the fight against climate change. That includes residents, business owners, organizations, and institutions.
This is really an all-hands-on-deck kind of moment.
The region has a series of goals that it hopes to reach by 2050. In Oshawa, reporting for The Chronicle, I'm Andrew Clark.
Recruiting is one of the biggest responsibilities of being a college coach. But when the season gets canceled, how do coaches at Durham College attract new student athletes? Aiden Cowling McDonald has more.
Last year, Durham College experienced one of the greatest sports seasons in school history, with multiple teams winning both provincial and national championships. That success is why this year has been such a disappointment. With no games or practices, one challenge remains: recruiting new student athletes for this fall. Both coaches and recruits have been creative during this sports-free school year.
Coaches have had to rely on things like old game footage and even videos of athletes in their backyards with a ball or a bat to determine whether or not they can play at the college level.
Yeah, so we're getting all kinds of different video, of course, and student athletes being very, very creative doing it. So the coaches are relying heavily on the video. So the better the video, the better evaluations can happen of the student athlete.
Babcock says the school has successfully hosted two virtual recruiting events to allow athletes to meet coaches. And he says there hasn't been a drop-off in recruits. The women's soccer team has signed 5 new student athletes, but not without some challenges.
Because here's the problem with film. You can make anything look pretty on a film. You know, all they do is send the highlights of all the great things they've done. I really like to watch a player to see what they do on the mistakes.
Bianchi is in his 3rd year as head coach and loves traveling to watch recruits play. However, while there's mostly been negatives this year, he plans on conducting his meetings with players over Zoom permanently.
I find they open up much more in the Zoom conference than they do at the field. At the Zoom conference, they're in their home, they feel comfortable, they have their parent right beside them. It's kind of all good.
While the Lords haven't played a game at Vasos Field in over a year, Bianchi says he's confident in his group of returning players and new recruits and feels they'll be able to compete in the fall. And when Babcock was asked about how eager he is to get back on campus, he simply said, "I'd be ready to go tomorrow." In Oshawa, reporting for The Chronicle, I'm Aiden Callan McDonald.
Student athletes have 5 years of eligibility to compete at the varsity level. However, this year, they are granted a year of leniency. They receive scholarships, even though all Ontario University athletics were canceled due to COVID-19. Taylor Gilbert has more on what that means for athletes and the future of varsity sports.
It's not just a student's talent on the ice, on the court, or on the pitch that determine the worthiness of a scholarship.
You know, you have to obviously be a strong athlete with a lot of skill. But there's, you know, community commitments, leadership capabilities, and different aspects of being sort of a good teammate, going above and beyond the call of duty in terms of working out and making sure you're ready to play when time does come to play. So we were able to maintain all of our scholarships for our athletes because of those other criteria.
Those who graduated this year can return for an extra year of eligibility, but they have to be enrolled in a full-time program. For some, this means coming back for postgraduate or graduate work, or enrolling in another undergraduate degree to get a minor. This may leave graduating students with a tough decision, since COVID doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. Ridgebacks midfielder Mateo Marquez has seen his share of lost seasons.
Because of my injury, I lost 2 years now, so I still have technically 3 years of eligibility left. So yeah, I'll be coming back next year, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Having missed back-to-back seasons and with plans to graduate in the fall, Marquez can only hope players will be allowed to see the pitch soon. However, Barker is confident students will see some form of sport being played come fall.
We've got a pretty robust plan that's in place with the OUA, and as long as the vaccine rollout sort of continues on the path that it is, and hopefully we can get back to some form of normalcy with some in-person experiences back on campus.
Barker said Ontario Tech will maintain its scholarship program even if no sports are played in the coming season. In Oshawa, reporting for The Chronicle, I'm Taylor Gilbert.
Coming up later in the show, he's only in his early 20s, but already Brian Badgey has his own plane and pilot's license. We'll hear his story. And you have may driven by it many times, but do you know the story of Camp Samak? Mustafa Aziz will tell us about this little piece of nature with a long history. Two local TikTokers are inspiring people around the world with one very simple concept: art. The account at @paintwithjeff has 1.2 million followers. Andrea Iman tells us how the pair started and the impact they're having today.
Jeff Matsuo was born with cerebral palsy and has limited fine motor abilities as a result. He also deals with a lot of mental health issues, such as OCD and anxiety. His high school friend, Jake Stevens, is always trying to find new activities for Matsuo to calm him. A year ago, painting was the activity. Stevens wasn't sure if it was going to work because it does require fine motor abilities.
And normally when we work on like, or we have an activity or we're doing something together, he can only focus about a half an hour on a task. And he was locked in on this for like 5 hours. I was like, where is this coming from? And he was happy and he was content. And
about a year ago, they started their TikTok account. And around March, followers were asking for Matsuo's artwork. They now sell copies on Etsy. When they started to sell it, Stevens thought they would only sell around 10 or 12 paintings. But they now generated almost 90,000 in sales from around the world, including as far away as Malaysia.
There was no idea to make any kind of money off this thing or anything, and it just kind of grew organically, and I threw it out there and for the people that wanted it.
They've donated the profits to the Ontario Federation for Cerebral Palsy and created a bursary for Pickering High School, where they met. It's aimed at students with special needs. The $150 award will be given at graduation for at least the next 10 years.
There's so many things in life that he needs people to do, and he'll always need people to do. So my goal in this whole thing is just to try and make this one thing that he doesn't really need my help. He can just do it himself.
Stevens has received many messages from people saying the videos have helped them. Others have also told him they're amazing for the children who also have special needs. In Ajax, reporting for The Chronicle, I'm Andrea Iman.
As we mentioned earlier, February is Black History Month. We heard a brief bit from Tala Lumbu's poem, Melanin, earlier in a piece by Alaya Sue. Here's Lumbu now, reading her full poem.
Thank you for a well-rehearsed lie. You kept telling me that if I could only see who you truly were underneath the faulty headlines, then I would tighten my grip around you and love you more. I'm sorry for keeping you at the top of my list of things that I wanted to eliminate. Every time I try to rub you out of my life, you came back stronger, more vibrant. You never tolerated that cage. You are my glow, not my grime. You always stood out so full of pride, never hiding no matter how many times they would disrespect the throne that you've sat on since the beginning, since the very beginning. You make my fist look like an icon, a symbol of resistance. You color my iris to absorb the light, then brighten up the darkness. You are rich, rich in your complexity that you only use to exemplify the beauty in others. Oh, Mela. Cinnamon to my sugar, spice of my life, I should have never resented you. They taught me that you were a sin, that because of you, I would never amount to anything, that because you were so stubborn, too bold, and didn't know your place, so you had to be told that I needed to cut ties and dissociate myself from you. And I believed them, like a fool. Bleaching you out like a toxic stain that I couldn't get rid of. I could see you cracking, fighting to hold your composure, but I wouldn't give up. I craved acceptance, so much so that I was willing to destroy the very thing that made me whole. So I rejected you, but you stayed. Ingrained in my biology to this very day, Mela, to be depleted of your presence would be draining my essence. We are one. Intertwined and melded into an unmatchable golden hue. Dear Melanin, oh Melanin, my Melanin, how I love you.
We now bring you a new feature. With Chronicle reporters spread out across Ontario, we thought it would be fun to tell you a bit about our streets. My street looks at a person or a place to tell you the story. We start in Oshawa. Every year on Remembrance Day, Canadians remember those who fought for their freedom. But how does Oshawa honor veterans on an everyday basis? Aidan Cowling McDonald spoke with two politicians to find out.
Somers Drive and Spensley Drive have many things in common. Both streets were built in 2015. They connect to one another and are two of the 62 streets currently named after war veterans from Oshawa. But how did they get these names?
Suggestions come from citizens, or it may be city staff that come up with a list, and then they make suggestions to council, and council typically just says yes.
Kerr says the fact that the list has gotten shorter over the years is a good thing, but he's always aware it can grow.
You know, you'd like to hope there's never another need for another list of war veterans. You hope there's never another war. Sadly, we don't know.
Oshawa has always had a rich military history. It has its own memorial park and is home to the Ontario Tank Regiment. Another person who's added to that history is Deputy Mayor Bob Chapman. Chapman served in the Canadian military for over 37 years, and he understands the importance of naming streets after his fellow veterans.
Well, I think we have to remember what folks did in order to have what we have today. It's the same as everybody talks at Remembrance Day. People say, well, we don't want to glorify war. Well, Remembrance Day, and this doesn't glorify war.
Chapman has done his fair share to honor veterans as well. Every year, Chapman makes sure he's able to hand a street sign to a living veteran or their family. This year, there was no celebration, but Chapman delivered everyone's street sign right to their front step.
Both Chapman and Kerr agree that the city of Oshawa has done a great job honoring its veterans. This tradition is sure to continue as there are still 15 names on the list looking for a street of their own. In Oshawa, reporting for The Chronicle, I'm Aidan Callan-McDonald.
Learning to fly an airplane is much like learning how to drive a car, except that you're in a cylinder tube thousands of feet in the sky. That's where you'll find one young man in Brooklyn who's living his dream of becoming a pilot. Brooks Armstrong has a story.
Apsley Crescent is on the north border of Brooklyn, Ontario. The north side of the street provides a backyard view right onto Columbus Road. On the opposite side of the street is where 20-year-old Brian Badgey, a licensed commercial pilot, began his journey into the sky.
I've always liked airplanes. Did a lot of traveling out when we lived in British Columbia, but I think that may have just sort of captured the idea that, ooh, this is something I want to do for the rest of my life. And then it slowly just built and built and built. And one day it was, okay, let's go see what this is about and see what I have to do it.
His first experience of being a passenger in the sky made him want to operate an aircraft. That experience stayed with Badgey through many years and grew until it turned into more than just an idea.
Right now I have a commercial license with a night rating and a multi-engine rating.
Badgey has flown for over 210 hours to obtain his current license. Becoming a licensed pilot is no easy task, and it's expensive when adding the hours of flying time. Badgey attended Durham Flight Center, which costs about $145 an hour, $60 more if an instructor is on board. The price could quickly add up.
Which isn't bad, but I currently own my own airplane with a few friends, which brings down the cost greatly. I actually wrote this up the other day while looking at my finances, and it cost me about $8,000 to fly last year. And that was to put on 100 hours. 100 hours of flying worked out in my aircraft to about $8,000.
After filtering in the cost of the aircraft, flight per hour fees, maintenance, and fuel costs, the price is not cheap. But Badgey knows he'll always have a place to land in the flight industry in the future. Reporting for The Chronicle in Brooklyn, I'm Brooks Armstrong.
Hi, I'm Mustafa Aziz with the Weather Report. If all the snow that fell this weekend has made you wonder, where is global warming when you need it? Well, there's both good and bad news. Temperatures this week are expected to hover around the minus 10 degree mark until Valentine's Day. The following week, we'll see the temperature gradually rise up until it reaches minus 6 degrees on Saturday, 20th February. That's the good news. The bad news? Just because you can make a snowball doesn't mean global warming isn't happening.
Thank you for watching The Chronicle on Riot Radio. Remember, you can always check out our stories on The Chronicle website, chronicle.durhamcollege.ca. And follow us on social media at DCUOIT Chronicle to stay up to date on the latest news from the campus and community. Have a great week. I'm Marcella Zinian.